Chapter 29. All people have regrets. Warriors are no exceptions. One would hope it was possible to distinguish between events caused by one's carelessness or lack of ability and those caused by circumstances or forces beyond one's control. But in practice, there is no difference. All forms of regret sear equally deeply into the mind and soul. All forms leave scars of equal bitterness. And always, beneath the scar, lurks the thought and fear that there was something else that could have been done. Some action or inaction that would have changed things for the better. Such questions can sometimes be learned from. All too often, they merely add to the scar tissue. A warrior must learn to set those regrets aside as best he can, knowing full well that they will never be very far away.
"It was, by anyone's standards, a slaughter,"
Yularen said.
His voice is under control, but holds deep regret and the echo of dark memories.
"I saw some horrendous things during the Clone Wars. This ranks right up there with the worst of them."
"You have the numbers?" Thrawn asked.
"Yes, sir,"
Yularen said, keying his data pad.
"As you can see, the number of civilian deaths far exceeded the number of insurgents killed."
"How do we know which were which?"
Governor Price asked.
Her voice held scorn and caution, but no sympathy. The muscles of her arms and shoulders are tight beneath her tunic.
"This was a citizen uprising, after all."
"We can assume the people inside the central cordon and the ones holding weapons on the sentry lines were insurgents,"
Yularen said.
His tone is polite, but holds barely concealed contempt.
"The people in their houses when the firestorm blew them apart probably weren't."
"There is no need for vehemence, Colonel,"
Price said.
Her voice holds calmness now, with the scorn fading. Her hands resting on the conference table show rigid self-control.
"You do not know how the explosives came to be detonated before the shield generator?"
Thrawn asked.
"I'll tell you what I told Colonel Yularen,"
Price said.
"I went to my parents' house to get them ready to leave. We waited there for Agent Gudry. He didn't return by the time we'd agreed on, so we left. I can only assume he was trapped or disabled by the insurgents, and rather than allow them to take him alive, triggered the caps."
"Those on the explosives cash first?"
Yularen asked.
His voice held suspicion. His eyes are fixed unblinkingly on Price.
"Or he triggered both at once," Price said.
Her voice holds impatience and challenge. Her hands begin to move, then become motionless again as she regains control.
"Or he tried the generator first and it failed. We won't know the details until a full investigation is made."
Commander Vantos stirred in his chair, also frustrated and suspicious, but he said nothing.
"The Senate has already ordered an inquiry,"
Yularen said.
"But I doubt they'll find anything useful. The inner section of the complex where the explosions took place was reduced pretty much to dust."
"Again, I don't have much sympathy for the insurgents," Price said. "But I do mourn the loss of Agent Gudry. He was a good agent and a loyal protector."
"I trust you also mourn the troopers who died in the blast,"
Yularen said.
"Including those who had been sent to rescue you."
"A mission I was unaware of," Price said.
Her voice holds coolness. The tightness is fading from her muscles.
"As I told you earlier, I didn't want to use my comm more than absolutely necessary."
"Have we information as to the insurgents' ability to tap into such communications?"
Thrawn asked.
"We don't know that they could, sir," Vantos said.
but it is theoretically possible. And someone like Night Swan would certainly have wanted to keep tabs on who was communicating from inside a stronghold if he'd had the capability.
Yes, Thrawn said. Your report, Colonel, said his death was confirmed?
Yes, sir, Yularen said. His body was found and identified in one of the outer areas, where the damage was less severe. He was probably checking on the perimeter.
He hesitated.
Possibly preparing to stand alongside the defenders there.
Yes, Thrawn said.
And so it was over. The path had ended. The pattern was broken. The song of the Night Swan was silenced. The galaxy would be the worse for its loss.
Still, the Emperor is pleased with the outcome, Price said.
Her voice holds pride and satisfaction as she looks at Thrawn.
Her head is held high.
Very pleased indeed.
Is he? Thrawn said.
Price's eyes slip away from his gaze.
Her throat muscles tighten, her expression holding caution and discomfort.
He is, she said. I expect you'll find a tangible way to show his thanks.
There was a signal from the conference room intercom.
Yes,
Thrawn asked.
A message from Coruscant, Admiral,
Feyre reported.
Her voice holds controlled excitement.
The Emperor requests your presence at the Imperial Palace at your earliest convenience.
Thank you, Commander, Thrawn said. Transmit my acknowledgement and inform Coruscant that we will travel there as soon as the Baeton matter has been finalized.
Yes, sir.
The intercom clicked off.
You don't want to keep the Emperor waiting, Admiral,
Price warned.
Agreed, Yularen said. With respect, sir, we can handle things from groundside.
And the cruisers can follow on as soon as their repairs are complete, sir, Vanto added. They shouldn't be more than a couple of days behind us. If you'd like, we can leave the frigates here with them so that they can all convoy together.
An excellent thought, Thrawn said. Very well.
Inform Commander Feyre to make ready. The Chimera will leave Baeton in 3 hours, with the rest of the task force following as able. Colonel Yularen, if during the next 3 hours you find my attention here is further needed, please inform me so that I may delay our departure.
Yes, sir.
Yularen, Vanto, and Price stand up from the table.
Governor Price, a word with you in private, if I may, Thrawn said.
Vanto and Yularen exchanged glances, but they collected their data cards and left the conference room without further comment.
A question, Admiral?
Price asked when the others were gone.
She remains standing by her chair. Her body stands holding no indication that she is preparing to sit down again.
A statement, Governor,
Thrawn corrected.
Price shakes her head. Her cheek and throat muscles show fresh tension, but her back is stiff and straight, and her head is held high with defiant confidence.
No.
Excuse me.
That's not how you bring an accusation against a powerful member of the Imperial government, she said. For all your tactical skill, Admiral, you still don't know the first thing about dealing with politicians.
Do I not?
You do not, Price said.
Her voice holds confidence.
Your entire career has been one of military triumphs and political bumps. And every one of those bumps has required someone with political skill to get you out of it.
She leans forward and sets her hands palms down on the table in front of her.
Let's lay out our cards. Or rather, I'll lay out my cards, since you're not the card-playing sort. You clearly suspect me of knowing more than I've said about what happened on Baeton. Fine. Suspect me all you want. But don't lose track of the fact that you need me.
In what way?
To smooth out your future political bumps, she said. And trust me, there will be more bumps. You're a successful admiral. That makes you a target for people who want to siphon off some of your power for themselves.
People such as you. She smiled again.
Her expression holds irony. Her body stance holds a slightly grudging respect.
At least you've learned some political lessons. But no, I don't want to take your power away. I merely want to direct it along a line that will do us both the most good.
Such as?
The fact is that I have something of an insurgent situation on Lothal, she said.
Her voice holds reluctance. Her facial heat increases. Her body stance holds resentment and anger, but directed elsewhere.
I wanted to make my world the Outer Rim's best and finest source of high-grade metals, as well as the premier manufacturing and military center for the sector. In the process, I may have pushed the locals a bit too hard. Regardless of the cause, we have a problem, and Admiral Constantine has been less than effective in dealing with it.
You've spoken to the High Command.
The High Command has a lot of hot spots to deal with right now.
Her voice holds impatience and scorn.
With more popping up every day. I've had some discussions with Grand Moff Tarkin, and he isn't any happier about the situation than I am. He's especially not happy that our local rebels are starting to take their brand of annoyance to other places in the region. He's made it clear that I need to find a solution.
Have you?
Yes, she said. You.
And what would my benefit be?
I already detailed one of those benefits, Price said. If you don't think my political guidance of enough value, then consider the gain to your prestige from another victory or two. That's all Coruscant values, you know. Results.
She cocks her head to the side.
My sources tell me that Fleet Admiral Sartin of the 7th Fleet is going to be replaced soon. Baton is just the kind of victory that could put you in line for that command.
I am content with the 96th Task Force.
You'd be more content with the 7th Fleet, Price retorted.
She pauses, her expression and body stance showing her effort to regain control.
One last card. A card I know you care about. The 7th Fleet carries a lot of firepower. It's sent to major conflicts where there are powerful and desperate enemies. If you don't command it, someone else will. Do you think there's anyone else in the Imperial Navy who cares as much as you do about limiting casualties?
You make interesting points,
Thrawn said. I will consider your proposal.
Do that.
Her body stance holds complete confidence. Her expression holds quiet triumph.
In the meantime, go have your meeting with the Emperor. Smile and thank him for whatever accolades or trinkets he heaps on you.
She smiles, her expression holding cynicism.
Who knows? He might even make you a Grand Admiral. The point is, get through it, and we'll see each other again soon.
We may indeed, Thrawn said. Farewell, Governor.
Safe journey.
She had been gone for 18 minutes when Vanto returned to the conference room.
Governor Price just left, he reported, eyeing Thrawn closely. What did she say?
She offered herself as my advisor on political matters.
You could definitely use someone like that,
Vanto said doubtfully.
Not sure she's the right one for the job, though.
What did she say about Creek Path?
She didn't admit to playing any part in the destruction, Thrawn said. But I believe she bears at least some of the blame.
But you have no proof?
None.
Figured as much, Vanto said, his voice grim.
And from what Yularen said, we're not likely to get any.
So she gets away with it.
Perhaps, Thrawn said. Perhaps not. I've noted there is often a symmetry to such things.
We can hope, Vanto said. So, to Coruscant?
To Coruscant,
Thrawn said.
I know you're not going to like accepting the credit for the action down there,
Vanto said.
But try to smile and act grateful anyway.
He frowned.
What are you smiling about?
Governor Price had much the same advice.
Oh, Vanto shrugged.
Well, it's still a good idea.
With your permission, I'd like to go see if there's any final data from Groundside before we leave.
Please do,
Thrawn said.
Remember, too, that others have served the Empire well. I trust the Emperor will have enough honors to award to all.
I wouldn't hold my breath, Vanto said. Doesn't matter. I'm quite content to be your aide, Admiral. It's where I'm supposed to be.
Perhaps, Thrawn said. Perhaps not.
The throne room was, as Thrawn remembered it, though he saw it now with different eyes. The new uniform he'd been given was white, with gold shoulder bars and silver collar insignia, completely unlike anything else in the Imperial Navy. The rank insignia plaque the Emperor held in his gnarled hand was equally impressive. 12 tiles in blue, red, and gold. The Emperor's face was as Thrawn had never seen it.
His expression owned satisfaction, with hints of both amusement and malice.
Congratulations, Grand Admiral,
he said, as he held out the insignia plaque.
An excellent day for you. An excellent day for my empire.
The amusement grows.
Though I fear many will not see it that way.
I will endeavor to set their hearts and minds at ease,
Thrawn said.
But I must first calm my own heart and mind. The smile leaves the Emperor's face. Some of the satisfaction fades, replaced by displeasure.
Must you now?
He said.
Very well. Speak your mind, Grand Admiral.
Tell me about the Death Star. The amusement vanishes. The malice grows.
When and how did you hear of that project?
I learned the name from unguarded dispatches, Thrawn said. I deduced the size and power from resource allocations. I now wish to learn from you its purpose. The amusement reappears, mixed now with understanding and triumph.
Ah,
he said, lowering his hand to his side.
Your thoughts are laid bare, Mithron Yurodo. You fear that once I have dealt with the rebels within my borders, I will turn my unstoppable weapon against your Chiss. Is that your concern?
That is part of it,
Thrawn said.
I would certainly not wish to see my aid to you and your empire subverted into conquest or destruction. But I would also warn against diverting too many of the Empire's resources from a flexible navy of capital ships and starfighters to massive projects that can bring the Imperial presence to only one system at a time.
Allow me to allay your fears, the Emperor said. I have no designs against your people. Indeed, I have noted that despite your assistance in mapping the unknown region hyperspace routes, you have kept the location of Chiss worlds and bases secret. That is acceptable. I don't begrudge you the defense of your people. As to Imperial resources...
He smiles again. The triumph growing and turning strangely brittle.
There will soon be no need to spread the Imperial presence across the galaxy, Once the Death Star is fully operational, its very existence will suppress all opposition. And so...
He raises his arm, again holding out the rank plaque.
This time, Thrawn took it.
Good, the Emperor said.
His smile again holds satisfaction. The malice fades, but never entirely disappears.
At the side of the throne room, a door slid open, and a tall, black-clad figure appeared. A long, black cloak swirling behind him.
Ah, Lord Vader,
the Emperor called a greeting.
He beckons to the figure. His body stance holds a sense of mastery and domination.
Come, join us. I don't believe you have met Darth Vader, Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Vader approaches, his pace measured but confident. His face is hidden, his muscle movements muted and unreadable beneath his armored clothing. But his stance holds power and authority. It also holds confidence. More than anything else, it holds confidence.
You are correct, Your Excellency, Thrawn said. I greet you, Lord Vader.
Grand Admiral,
Vader said, inclining his helmeted head.
His voice is deep and partially mechanical. It too holds power and confidence.
I've heard a great deal about you, Thrawn said.
I am pleased we have finally met.
Yes,
Vader said.
As am I,